It's Emily here, and today I want to invite you to make sure to check out Robinhood Integrative Health. If you are a resident of the Winston-Salem, North Carolina area, and you're looking for a doctor who treats you differently, looks deeper into the issues that you're having, and seeks to hear you as a person and really help to get you better, then I can't recommend Robinhood Integrative Health, where Dr. Wiggy practices, enough. Make sure that you go to their website and see how you can benefit from their services today. And did you know that they even take some insurances, which basically never happens in integrative medicine? So make sure to check them out and enjoy the episode. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Healthy Discourse. It's Emily here and Dr. Wiggy, and we haven't recorded a podcast together in a while.
A little bit, yeah.
I think since our vacation in the summer.
That might be right.
It's October.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as we're recording this, we are waiting for our baby girl to arrive at any, I would say, moment, but that would indicate that I'm in labor and I'm not. So any day, we'll say day.
Yep.
So we're between 39 and 40 weeks right now. So just waiting, and we figured it's a rainy Saturday and our kids are fishing, and we figured we would jump on and talk about the flu, because for a few years we didn't seem to have any flu in right. The height of COVID.
Disappeared for a couple of
it
years.
It did. It went away. So I think last year, though, there were some cases of flu, and
yeah,
you know, I think in the world we live in now, post-2020, I think people think a little bit more about decisions and wellness, at least our audience does, and how we can prevent things or prepare, make sure that our bodies are ready for what might come this winter. Mm-hmm. So, and if you haven't yet and you have children, I would encourage you to listen to 2 episodes back when I spoke with Wiggy's colleague, Dr. Nicole Craven, who is the pediatrician at his office, about winter viruses. She shared so much really useful, helpful information for parents on there to just help us not feel so overwhelmed when our kids are sick with fevers and viruses and the like. So,
sure.
All right. Well, talk to us about the flu. Does the flu make you nervous?
Definitely doesn't make me nervous. It is strange how it did seem to disappear for a little bit there, and now it's back. But it does seem to be probably going to be an issue this year. We're seeing some strange viruses just already this fall, and so I anticipate that we're going to continue to see some things over the winter. And so I think that the important thing to think about with the flu is just to, and being prepared can mean lots of different things, but basically what you want to do is just be as healthy as you possibly can for the flu season. So if it does come around, if you do get exposed to it, if your kid gets it, or if you get it, then you'll be ready. And there's different ways of doing that, but really being as healthy as possible is how you can handle the flu and get through flu season relatively easy. The first step with that, of course, is nutrition. So I think nutrition is critically important for being ready. Surprisingly, nothing, you know, that's never talked about with flu prevention and flu season. There's no discussion about diet or exercise. It's all about you have to get the vaccine. That's really all that's ever, ever emphasized.
Right.
But if you're eating well, and that generally includes a low inflammatory diet. So that's kind of the gist of it. You do want to be controlling inflammation, because flu or other viruses are inflammatory responses.
And a low inflammatory diet would include things like single ingredient foods, yep, whole foods, and would exclude things like excessive sugars, things that break down the sugar in our bodies. For different people, grains affect us differently, so that's just something to consider. And anything that's highly processed that has lots of ingredients. This is a total side note, but for those who have kind of paid attention to GMOs in the past, that labeling has now changed, and the label will now say contains bioengineered ingredients. Just FYI.
Sure.
So
yeah, no, that's a pretty good definition for a low inflammatory diet. I've really been moving more towards the single ingredient diet. I think that's a nice, simple way to think about it, is what did God make for us to eat? So right. It's going to be meat, vegetables, fruits, and some nuts and seeds.
Right. And that doesn't mean that you can only eat a single ingredient at a time.
Right. No, you can combine the single ingredients. Yeah. But we still want to be seeing we don't want to be seeing 20 different ingredients, because right. Once you get looking through that list, you're going to find something that shouldn't be in there.
Yes.
So, but yeah, single ingredients typically makes it a lot easier to think about.
Seed oils also are very inflammatory for a lot of people.
For sure. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. So, single ingredient can be
I was thinking more in processed foods, because almost all of them have seed oils.
Yeah. So, if we're going to talk about things to eliminate, yeah. You touched on this already, but I think most people should be avoiding grains. I don't think there's a lot of health benefit for grains in general, and a lot of them are either hybridized or are sprayed with pesticides or one of the dirtier foods, so right. I don't think grains are necessarily good for anybody. Processed foods, of course, I mean, that at this point, that should be obvious. Processed foods should be avoided. And then, yeah, I do think seed oil is one of those that is often not understood as well. So that is in all processed foods, basically, but it's also in all of the fried foods mm-hmm. in restaurants. So that would be things like, French fries, chips, anything that you're going to be.
All the good things.
Yeah. So, and of course, we don't do this 100% all the time.
No.
But you want to be avoiding them more often than not. I've noticed that seed oils, I think, mess up my stomach. Mm. I tend to feel a little more, I think, bloated with them. And I think even potentially disrupt my sleep. So I've cut back on fries and those things as well. Because we only did it once a week. Yeah. But I really cut back even to
I still eat
that.
Fries once a week. So that's my...
Sure. And all this should be within moderation. We're trying to give you kind of a high-level overview of what an anti-inflammatory diet looks like. So that's step one, is kind of, again, controlling inflammation. And then exercise, I think, is also important, because that's oftentimes neglected over the winter.
Yeah.
I still think getting some degree of exercise outside the best you can is going to be important, because
invest in layers. It's well worth it.
Because I do think there could be something to, going to the gym, if there's a ton of people there, the circulation not quite as good as far as, the air circulation. So it's possible there could be some exposure to flu or flu-like illnesses in those closed environments. Fresh air is always the best.
Right.
Now, again, it can be hard, especially where you live, but if you can bundle up or invest in some higher tech gear, you typically can still get outside most of the year and get that fresh air, get the sun exposure. I still think sun exposure is so important for everything, just for setting patterns, setting rhythms in your life, getting your brain established for when it should be awake, when it should be asleep. So I still think that sunlight in your eyes, very important. So I think that should not be just, oh, it's cold, I can never go outside. I think you try to figure out a way to get outside.
And both of us, I mean, I've been doing it for years. You've started more recently.
Right.
I go outside every day, multiple times.
Every day, for sure.
Regardless of the weather, unless it's like, obviously, don't go out in a hurricane. That's a bad idea. But
so those are the foundational pieces. And again, I think that should be talked about whenever we're talking about flu prevention. It's not just about supplements.
Right.
You want to be making sure that your diet's good, that your exercise is consistent, movement.
You mean you have patients that just want to take supplements for everything?
Yep, we have a few of those. But then supplements, so joking aside, supplements do have a, I think, a very important role with flu prevention. The most important one for that is vitamin D.
Right.
Vitamin D, I'd say, is number 1, 2, and 3, because there's actually really good studies on vitamin D and either preventing flu or reducing the severity of flu. And there is a sweet spot for vitamin D. So you want to be generally higher the better. You can overdo it, but as long as you're taking K2 with the D, it's really hard to overdo vitamin D. So we tend to err on the higher end of the range for vitamin D levels. As long as you're taking K2, it's going to help control the calcium metabolism side of the D, which you have to be somewhat careful with. But like I said, K2 helps kind of protect you from that. So we do like higher doses of D on a daily basis, sometimes twice a day basis, in order to get your levels optimal.
Right.
I do like levels at least above 60, It's probably around 60 to 90-ish is kind of where we shoot for immune system and flu season. And I do think that makes a big difference. Keep your vitamin D level up, much lower risk of catching it. And if you do catch it, lower risk of having a severe case.
And arguably, that's one of those things that for most people that live most places, even with that outside time, you're going to need to
Sure.
supplement because you're not, you don't have a lot of skin exposed, the sun isn't as strong, all of those things. So,
Yep. So that's the most important one. I said that's one, two, and three. And then I do like vitamin C over flu season. I also like zinc over flu season. So those are kind of more preventive things. And then as far as kind of some treatment side, I'm a big fan of colloidal silver. So basically, whenever you start feeling the first signs of a cold or a flu, you start kind of loading up on silver. You do have to make sure you're using a high quality silver. That's one little caveat to that. I wouldn't just buy whatever. We've never seen any problems with silver, but you want to make sure you're getting high quality. But I recommend again, first kind of symptoms is do like a teaspoon of silver like every 2 hours, like while you're awake. I generally just have a silver bottle on my desk. So if I start having a little sniffles or something, I will just kind of basically sip on it throughout the day. And I think that makes a huge difference. So anecdotally, I've seen it where it reduces the duration of illness, where it's much shorter. So instead of being down for 5 days, you're down for, 2 days. And as far as severity, also much better when you do this early on. So I like silver. I'm a big fan of it.
In fact, last week I just felt like I was having chills, and I was like, I don't like this. I'm about to give birth. And I used the nasal one and just kind of put, because I felt it was kind of up there, and
So that's
two
actually,
times and I was done.
yeah, so that's actually a good point too. So I kind of were, I was talking most more specifically about oral supplements, the D, the C, the zinc, and then silver. But actually doing some degree of nasal spray or something, also very good for more prevention. So this was really teased out through COVID. We saw that doing some sort of nasal spray or nasal irrigation decreases chance for getting it, but also decreases severity drastically because that's where the virus incubates.
Especially if you're doing it at that first sign of anything where you're like, I kind of feel off, then before the symptoms get stronger, it seems like the earlier the better.
But also can be done preventively. So you can also do this just morning and night. And so if there is anything that's kind of getting in there that's starting to grow, not a bad thing. That's another thing that I'll typically do. If I see a patient that's sick or something, then I will do a nasal spray. Sometimes I'll spray actually my face with silver just to kind of block any entryways. But I do like some sort of nasal spray. And this doesn't have to be silver. It's just an easy one. It doesn't burn. It's really, really gentle. So I think it's a nice one to start off with. But you can do iodine. There's a brand name, I think Kofi RX is one we carry in the store. That's an iodine nasal spray. That's the one that Dr. McCullough is really big on. And studies to show that it does help with COVID prevention and treatment. So actually multiple studies now on that. So again, why isn't that being talked about for all other viruses at this point? But again, so some degree, so silver is good. I do like iodine. Iodine's a little bit more irritating, but it's fine. And then there's other ones like xylitol is another one you can use. Like the sweetener xylitol as a nasal spray. That's a good antiviral. So there's different ones, but also good to have on hand, either preventively or when you start getting
I
sick.
know a lot of people will do those before and after they travel, like an airplane and that kind of thing. So if you don't do it all the time, it can just be good when you know you're going to be exposed to tons of people in a small space. So let's talk about, well, I can give some numbers because I think people are probably like, well, what about the flu shot? And that's what my provider tells me to do. I think that it's good to just give some data on that, and because we're all for people making their own decisions, it is important to understand the efficacy of the flu shot and how low it can really be. And looking at the data from the last, going back to 2017, the highest efficacy that we saw was actually last year. At what the, and this is CDC data, so take that for what it's worth, was 54%. but it goes down to the 30s most years since 2017. So, and we don't know necessarily why that is, except for, I mean, from what I understand, the flu shot is given based on the guess of what strains will be active that
That's
year.
right.
And sometimes that's right, and sometimes it's very far off.
Right.
So, around a 30% rough average efficacy rate is not very high. Number one, and then we need to also consider the ingredients and side effects that can easily negate some of the things that we just talked about. So it is important to know that some of these shots can include formaldehyde, MSG, and I think this is pronounced thimerosal. Is
The
that correct?
Marisol.
Thimerosal, which is a mercury-based preservative. So that is something to consider as well. And on the inserts for these shots and on the CDC's website, you know, we have the standard reactions of the swelling and fever, soreness, headaches, that kind of thing that are pretty minor. Also on there, though, is anaphylaxis, hives, major swelling. I'm really bad with medical terms, so I'm just going to give the layman's terms. Different eye disorders. How do you say that? Guillain-Barré, GBS,
Guillain-Barré.
Guillain-Barré, which is temporary paralysis, right? Convulsions, seizures, inflammation of the spinal cord, Bell's palsy, neuropathy, pain in extremities, chest pain, vomiting. All these kinds of things. That's just a sampling of just to, these are things we need to be aware of versus just being like, oh, well, it's at the CVS pharmacy, so I'm just going to get it while I'm here. So it is important to know that people do have real reactions
Sure.
from
Yeah,
these
react.
shots and that they're not as effective as we might want them to be.
Yeah, I mean, reactions are possible. I will say with flu shots, I haven't seen a lot of severe reactions to it. I think in the realm of things, it's probably more benign than a lot of other ones we've seen. You know, we've definitely seen problems with like COVID vaccines. So the mRNA vaccines, I think those are causing lots of issues. Flu vaccines more established, I would say less risk. So yes, there are possibilities. People can have some major reactions to them, but overall, I think the side effect profile is not bad for flu shots. So the way I generally approach flu shots is, it's more of a mindset just discussion about how do you want your body to handle stressors, more or less. And so part of this goes back, and I've always said this for anything, that it's always an individual decision. So I think I have plenty of patients that choose to do flu shots, and I have plenty of patients that choose not to do them. And the things you need to be thinking about is you need to be thinking about your overall health. That's the biggest thing to think about. And of course, that has to do with age, that has to do with weight, that has to do with underlying medical issues. There's lots of different things you have to kind of keep in mind. So think about your underlying health, and then you have to be thinking about, I mean, how concerned are you? So then there's also a kind of concern element to it. But the way that I handle it is that I don't do flu shots. I'll just say that I haven't for a long time, and I don't maybe remember having
I
last time
think
I
you
had
had
it.
to probably when you worked at a
I
hospital.
did, yep. So I did when I was in residency. I did do flu shots, but nothing since then. And again, I don't remember having it in the recent past. But I also think about it this way: is that if I were to get sick with the flu, so be it.
Right.
My immune system can handle it. I can beat it off, and then actually my immune system is stronger. I mean, I
Right.
think there is something to that.
Sure.
And so I think having more exposure to things, having your immune system recognize it, fight it off, and then you have memory to whatever it was that you just fought off. Again, I think there's some benefit to that. You know, one of the things that was interesting, looking at during early COVID, was that there were certain people that had exposure to these viruses, coronaviruses, that were like common cold viruses, actually portrayed some protection for COVID. So having some exposure in your past to different coronaviruses actually appeared to provide a little bit of protection. So that's where I think it's better to have a strong immune system that has strong memory and strong ability to fight things off and newer things
Yeah, I have a
than not.
question. I hear anecdotally a lot where people say, I'm never getting the flu shot because the one time I got it, I got the flu the worst I ever had in my life. Do you find that that's maybe sometimes true? Is there any, or is that just,
Yeah, I've heard that all the time. I actually do hear that a
I hear it
lot.
all the time too.
And so I think there must be something to that because I don't see why how many so many people could be saying that. I don't think that the flu shot gives you the flu. So I don't think that that's what happens. But I think it's possible that it could be one of those things, at least initially after you do the flu shot, there could be a slight depression
Of the
of the
immune
immune
system.
system for that particular thing while you're kind of mounting a response, and that could actually make you more susceptible to flu in that short window. So I think there might be some evidence for that, but I'm not sure. But yeah, I've heard that a lot. So that does tell us that something may be happening, at least early on, with the immune system that may increase susceptibility.
What else?
I think that's good.
That's
That's a
it.
good
That's all we
coverage. Yep,
got.
that's good coverage.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just down to one of those things too. Like you said, it's a lot of there's a lot of fear mongering, just kind of like we did with COVID. In seasons where the flu is worse, we see all these statistics about all these people who are hospitalized everywhere and that type of thing. And of course, these are individual decisions, but being prepared, taking care of ourselves, kind of the whole, like, I like to look at all this as like we're training, we're practicing for life. So,
Yeah.
where every those investments that you make into your health day in and day out that help you to be healthier at your core, to be prepared for when you're not as healthy, all of that matters and adds up. And I think too often people unfortunately think about health as just being the way they look, whether that be, oh, my skin looks good, or I'm at this certain weight, or whatever. But really, the core of it is being able to show up for life, especially
Yeah.
when we're challenged in our health or whatever. And arguably, too, helping maintain stress levels and sleeping well and all those
Oh,
things,
for
all
sure.
that matters so much. We all have gotten sick when we've been run down in the past, and so.
Yeah, sleep's another huge one where we didn't talk about.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes the reason why we can get sick over the winters because we should be sleeping more, but we actually don't.
Yeah.
There's less sun during the winter, so I think we should actually have extended sleep cycles potentially during the winter. You actually have a little more sleep. That could be the way God designed it, so that keeps us healthier. So
Yeah.
sleep, yeah, getting good quality, adequate amounts of sleep, super important for the immune system
Yeah,
for
this is
sure.
coming from the people who are about to have a newborn, so.
Yeah, so we'll probably be sick all winter.
Hopefully not, but we've been banking sleep now. Too bad you can't actually do
Yeah,
that,
we've been trying.
but we have. All right. Well, if you guys have any questions, always feel free to share those with us. And if you're listening on Spotify, you can always send us a question or a comment. Those are always fun to receive. And as always, we would love for you to leave us a review on whatever listening platform you are listening on. So thank you so much. We wish you the best of health this fall and winter season, and we'll catch up next time. We will do an episode on newborn life and
Sure.
Naomi's birth once she's here. So
Sure.
thank you guys. Have a great day.